Welcome to today's episode of Brighteon Broadcast News for Thursday, July 17th, 2025. I'm Mike Adams. Thank you for joining me today. I've got a bombshell interview with Michael Yon coming up where he says that Trump is he's a puppet who is here to collapse the United States of America. And we're going to talk about Trump quite a bit today because, of course, Trump is making all kinds of waves. He posted the following on Truth Social, basically calling most of his supporters idiots. Here's what he said. Quote, the radical left Democrats have hit pay dirt again, just like with the fake and fully discredited Steele dossier, the lying 51 intelligence agents, the laptop from hell, which the Dems swore had come from Russia. No, it came from Hunter Biden's bathroom. And even the Russia scam itself, a totally fake and made-up story used in order to hide crooked Hillary Clinton's big loss in the 2016 presidential election. These scams and hoaxes are all the Democrats are good at. It's all they have. They are no good at governing, no good at policy, and no good at picking winning candidates. So far, 100% correct, actually, right? So far, what Trump has said in this tweet, you can't really disagree with it, right? Let's continue. Also, unlike Republicans, they stick together like glue. Their new scam is what we will forever call the Jeffrey Epstein hoax. And my past supporters have bought into this BS, hook, line, and sinker. They haven't learned their lesson and probably never will, even after being conned by the lunatic left for 8 long years. I have had more success in 6 months than perhaps any president in our country's history. Ooh, that's a big claim. And all these people want to talk about with strong prodding by the fake news and the success-starved Dems is the Jeffrey Epstein hoax. Let these weaklings continue forward and do the Democrats' work. Don't even think about talking of our incredible and unprecedented success because I don't want their support anymore, he says. Thank you for your attention to this matter. Make America great again. All right, that's the Trump post. So the highlights being that Trump now says that the entire story surrounding Jeffrey Epstein is a hoax, even though it's weird because he himself called for the Democrats to release the Epstein files and berated them for not doing so. He says that anybody who believes that there is anything around Jeffrey Epstein is, what did he say? Weaklings who are doing the Democrats' work, and he doesn't want their support anymore. Now, I saw Owen Schroyer from InfoWars. He posted about a 7-minute video on this that made a lot of sense. Owen concluded that it seems that Trump is now, he's just going all in with the establishment, which is mostly the Israeli Zionist establishment. And he pretty much used, you know, he used the MAGA populist people to propel himself into power. And now he's done with the people. He's just going to do the bidding of Israel. And he's going to throw his own supporters overboard. And he's going to pretend that there never were Epstein files, that it was all a hoax, which is really strange because earlier this year, early in the Trump administration, you may recall Pam Bondi gathered together all these influencers. And I remember DC Drano was one of them and gave them all a binder, each of them a binder. And the binder said Epstein files. And then they walked out of the White House and there's the famous photo of all these influencers holding up the binders that say Epstein files. Remember that? And Pam Bondi said, there's more coming out. The files are all on my desk. She said, they're on my desk. And she said that there's a truckload of horrific video files showing, you know, people being in compromising positions. And all this, these blackmail files existed. And she was getting to the bottom of it. And she was going to release the Epstein files. Remember that? So is Trump calling Pam Bondi a weakling and an idiot at this point? And why did the DOJ release the prison video of Epstein's cell door when then further analysis showed that there's 3 minutes missing from that video, by the way. So it's been doctored, obviously. And I played a video for you just a couple days ago of one of the officials of the Trump administration talking about how horrifying the evidence was and how important it is for this to come out, and that the Trump administration believes in transparency and it's all going to come out. So obviously, there are so many mixed signals in this. And it was just, 2 days ago that Laura Trump was posting that Trump is listening to his base and they're going to release Epstein files or some part of them now. That was 2 days ago. And then the very next day, Trump himself says, it's all a hoax. There's nothing in it except it's a hoax. So the current narrative, I know it's difficult to track all of these, it keeps changing every day. The current narrative is that the Democrats fabricated the Epstein files and just put everybody's name in it to embarrass people. Well, if that's the case, why didn't the Democrats release the Epstein files? Right? So this is, of course, causing a massive split among the so-called MAGA base. And you've got responses like this. The Patriot Voice on X posted 6 months. It only took 6 months for the mask to slip completely off of Trump. I never thought I would see the day where Trump would so viciously and with such malice throw more than half of his base off a cliff over a vital issue that must be fully addressed with transparency and honesty, not ignored and relegated to the trash bin of history. But here we are. This cuts very deep for Trump. It's the one issue where you can visibly see Trump gets emotional, more or less losing his cool enough for him to berate and completely undermine the concerns of some of his most ardent supporters, who put him in office to begin with, as we see in this totally unhinged post. It's impossible to ignore that the Epstein issue bothers him deeply. I have some theories, he writes. Again, this is the Patriot Voice. It's very interesting to me that Trump's permanent shadow and handler, Howard Lutnick, is the former neighbor of Jeffrey Epstein. They live next to each other in Manhattan. In my opinion, I think there is a lot of crossover there, and the influence of Lutnick may be helping to steer Trump's judgment on this. Another is that while Trump may or may not be directly implicated with Epstein, his name almost certainly appears in any files, transcripts, or depositions taken by Epstein's victims for one reason or another. We know that Epstein was an intelligence asset for both Mossad and the CIA. Also, he was an FBI informant. Trump is trying to protect someone or something with the intentional cover-up of Epstein that cannot be ignored, and given how controversial of a topic it is to bring up Epstein and his connections to a certain country in the Middle East, I think you can connect the dots. Still, the way Trump has been acting about this situation is not justified. There is no excuse. And when Trump says, I'm skipping ahead, he says, this statement, this is the post from the Patriot Voice, this statement is particularly very concerning. He's quoting Trump, quote, I don't want their support anymore. Now, Owen Schroyer says this is like the moment where Hillary Clinton called Trump supporters deplorables. Deplorables. Or you can remember certain quotes from Hillary Clinton, like, what difference does it make anyway? Or something similar to that, talking about the Benghazi situation and all the deaths. What difference really does it make? Well, Trump is probably going to be famous for, quote, I don't want their support anymore. It's even Robert Barnes, attorney Robert Barnes, was saying that it's a bad political move to tell most of your base that you don't want their support anymore. That's like political suicide. And as the Patriot Voice says, quote, Trump is acting exactly like someone who is blackmailed and or has something to hide. I'm not saying that he does, or that there is any proof of that outside of what we already know, but his actions recently, especially over the past week and a half, heavily point in that direction. Well, then, Alex Jones has also chimed in on this with some very strong video commentary on this. And he had Owen Schroyer on. And Alex Jones was saying, you know, is Trump being threatened and blackmailed? Has he been captured and forced to say these things? I mean, that's where this is going right now. That's what people are wondering. Because, you see, this behavior by Trump is totally unexpected by most of his support base. You know, Trump and Donald Trump Jr. and all the people around Trump, both during Trump's campaign and also until now, have all said in one way or another. I mean, even Bongino and Kash Patel and all of them said, yeah, we're going to get to the bottom of the Epstein files. We're going to release the Epstein files. Because it's a child trafficking pedophile network. It's a blackmail network. We're going to get to the bottom of this. We're going to release it. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but that's essentially what everybody said. So for Trump to now say there are no files, that Jeffrey Epstein did nothing wrong, he didn't run a child trafficking network. There is no blackmail. There are no victims. There are no clients. I mean, what? This is so unexpected that people are now having to reach for some very alternative theories, let's say. One of those theories is that Trump is currently, that he's been captured and threatened and blackmailed. Now, that's a valid theory because Mossad is capable of anything. Is it possible that Trump has been threatened or they threatened to kill his entire family if he didn't go along with this and just bury the Epstein files? Yeah, that's a possibility. I'm not saying that's for sure what happened. We don't know. But that's a possibility. Because remember Ross Perot? Yeah, running for office, third-party candidate in the 92 election. Yeah, and what did Ross Perot say when he dropped out of the race? He said, well, they threatened my family. They threatened to kill my daughter, I think is what he said. And he got out of the race. I mean, I think he came back in and then he ruined it for George Bush. And that's what got Bill Clinton elected, by the way. Because Ross Perot siphoned off just enough votes to deny the victory to George Bush, who, of course, and that's George Bush Sr., who is also a neocon CIA spook warmonger, you know, war criminal, obviously. He and Rumsfeld and the whole cabal, Cheney, and then George W. later. Yeah, of course they're all war criminals, but that's beside the point. Is Trump now being threatened by Mossad? One thing to consider. Another thing to consider is that Trump, I've seen this theory that Trump is suffering from some severe cognitive decline. This theory says that basically Donald Trump is becoming Joe Biden and that Trump is having much more trouble speaking when he types tweets. He's got very strange capitalization choices. Now, he has tended to tweet in all caps before, right? You've seen that. And now he types with just very strange capitalization choices, even in this post. Like when he says, I've had more success in 6 months than perhaps any president in our country's history, he capitalizes the word country for some unknown reason. And he says, when crooked Hillary Clinton's big loss in the 2016 election, these scams and hoaxes, and he capitalizes the word scams and the word hoaxes, again, for some completely unknown reason. Nobody can make any sense of this. Why is he capitalizing these words? But this argument is kind of difficult to substantiate because Trump has always, he's always tweeted in weird ways. Remember Covfefe? Trump has also, he's always spoken in a, like a distracted stream of consciousness way. His speeches are never, I mean, his spontaneous speech is never structured or organized at all. It's just like whatever's on the top of his head at the moment. And he will tend to announce things, even official things like European countries are going to pay for all the weapons we supply to Ukraine. And then, you know, Norway and Denmark, and they're like, what? You know, like, nobody told us. What are you talking about? Trump will tend to just, he'll just make up policy spontaneously in the moment and announce it to the world, shocking everybody. But these are actually behaviors of people suffering from dementia or Alzheimer's. I'm not saying that that's a diagnosis, but man, you know, he's getting up there in the years, and he's exhibiting some very questionable decisions, questionable speech, questionable tweets, and he's abandoning his entire support base. That's not rational. So there must be some reason for it. Some people believe that the reason is that he's been replaced by a clone. So, you know, Orange Man number two. There's a Trump clone. I mean, there's all kinds of theories floating around out there. I don't know which one is right. Or maybe the theory is just, you know, Occam's razor. The simplest explanation is just that Trump just doesn't give a crap about his support base anymore. Maybe that's all there is to it. But overall, in all of this, you can be sure that the explanations of, you know, 5D chess were just a delaying tactic. They were just nonsense. The whole time, you know, this was all going nowhere. Of course it was going nowhere. So if you supported Trump and you voted for Trump, which I did not do this time, and you thought Trump was going to release the Epstein files, Trump just said that he doesn't want your support any longer. And I'm seeing a lot of influencers, a lot of people like Robert Barnes and others say online that it looks very bad for the midterms for Republicans right now, because what's going to be the argument in the midterms? Vote for us. We're the ones who covered up the pedophiles. I mean, seriously, what's it going to be? Now, in case you're looking for political victories from Trump, yeah, the White House announced today that Coca-Cola has voluntarily agreed to start using real cane sugar in their Coke. It doesn't mean that they won't still be using high fructose corn syrup, just that they're going to use some real cane sugar. Wow. So as I tweeted out, it's all smoke and mirrors. They're going to use some tiny amount of cane sugar in Coca-Cola, and they could still sweeten the whole thing with high fructose corn syrup, you know, plus a drop of cane sugar or a couple of grains of cane sugar if it's crystallized. And by the way, does any intelligent person still drink soda? That's a serious question. You know, it contains phosphoric acid. It's horrible for your health. It's liquid sugars that are known to help promote diabetes and obesity, the acidification of your stomach and your blood because of the acid. It's horrific. The people I see drinking soda are just low IQ people for the most part, very few exceptions to that. You know, informed people just don't drink Coke or Pepsi or garbage like that. They drink healthier beverages. And the other thing about all these companies that are announcing the removal of food dyes, you've seen some of these announcements from RFK Jr. You know, like Hershey's is going to remove some dyes, and I don't know, a bunch of different companies. Yeah, it's all voluntary, which means they can reverse it anytime they want, or they can just not do it. So they're all getting this publicity from announcing this, and it'll probably never happen. Or it'll happen temporarily, and then they'll reverse it, and they'll go back to using the dyes. So none of this is actually policy. None of this is law. It's all just smoke and mirrors. It's just publicity stunts. That's all it is. And if you're one of those people who thinks, wow, this is so great, we're going to have real cane sugar and Coca-Cola, I no longer care about the White House covering up a sex trafficking, child trafficking, pedophile network of Mossad blackmail. Yeah, forget about that. We've got cane sugar and Coca-Cola. Yeah, if you're one of those people, I mean, I know you're not listening to this, but anybody out there who's like that is a moron, obviously. My guess is that we're going to see a lot more focus on Howard Lutnick in the months ahead. I've seen other people posting on X, like an account called Hustle Bitch, says about Lutnick, he didn't show up to work at the World Trade Center on 9/11. His business partner was Larry Silverstein. That's the guy who insured the towers for billions of dollars right before they were destroyed. And Silverstein collected billions. And he's also the guy who said on video, we decided to pull it for Building 7, which means, you know, detonation, obviously, demolition charges. This post also says that Lutnick pocketed $25 million from the American Airlines settlement, and he lived right next door to Jeffrey Epstein, and he's always shadowing Trump everywhere. I think he's Trump's handler, Mossad handler. Yeah, that's what it looks like. Pretty clear. By the way, Israel bombed Damascus in Syria. Just destroying buildings completely unprovoked, you know, once again, totally unprovoked act of aggression from Israel, just bombing all their neighbors, committing genocide, slaughtering women and children, assassinating scientists, just anything they want to do, killing anybody. And while Trump says nothing, and Trump will not utter the word Jesus. Have you noticed that? Trump will not utter the word Jesus. You may recall that I interviewed a person, an author, who used to work in the L.A. County jail system. And he said to me, this is years ago, he said to me that he found that people who were possessed by demons were unable to utter the name Jesus Christ because it physically hurt them, made them shake if they would try to say it. They could not say it, no matter what. You could offer them payment. You could offer them, you know, cigarettes or food or whatever in the jail, they would not say the name Jesus Christ. Today, Trump will not say the name Jesus Christ. Why do you think that is? Is it he doesn't want to anger the Jews or the Israel? You know, what is he possessed by demons? You know, what's going on? What's going on, huh? Bizarre. Why will he not utter the name Jesus Christ? Why won't he say, I put America first in the name of Jesus Christ? He will never say that. Yeah, kind of disturbing. So in terms of Epstein files, by the way, the flight logs are widely considered some of the Epstein files, and flight logs have been released, actually, and confirmed by the U.S. government, and Trump's name appears on the flight log 7 times. So Trump flew on the Lolita Express with Jeffrey Epstein 7 times. So did Prince Andrew. So did Bill Clinton. Yeah, but Trump wants you to believe it's a hoax. I wonder why. Now, if Trump actually is being threatened, he could be the greatest president in the history of our country by publicly just exposing the whole thing, saying, they threatened my family, they told me to do all these things, and yeah, it's Mossad, and they control this whole country, and I'm outing them right now. That would be totally based right there, right? But I don't think that's going to happen. All right, let's shift gears for a second here. Let me mention that I believe that we are already in World War III, the opening stages of it, and that it's becoming increasingly likely that this war is going to go nuclear. I want to remind you that Russia updated its nuclear posture, I think last September. And Russia has a posture now that says that Russia can respond with nuclear weapons to an existential attack from a country that itself is not a nuclear country, but that is supported by a nuclear-capable country. In other words, what Russia is saying is that if Ukraine attacks us and Ukraine is being supported by, let's say, the United States, then we, Russia, can use nuclear weapons to defend ourselves against that attack. Now, as Trump is saying, we're going to send more weapons to Ukraine And Zelensky has confirmed that, you know, he's all about using long-range missiles to strike targets deeper into Russia. It begs the question, is this going to go nuclear soon? And is that actually the goal of the West? Because it seems like Trump and Keir Stalin out of the UK and other European leaders really do want nuclear war because they've utterly destroyed their own economies. They've destroyed their own currencies. They've destroyed their own cultures. They've destroyed their credibility. What do they have left? Well, as Gerald Celente says, when all else fails, they take you to war. And it seems like that's kind of the goal at this point, is to take everybody to war. So don't be surprised if that happens. And, of course, there's a financial reset that sort of needs to happen in the West in order to cover up all the money printing and all the financial fraud. So, of course, Trump and Lutnick and others, of course, they want a great financial disaster and a reset, push everybody into the CBDCs, and they need a war to do that. And if the war is, you know, nuclear, well, all the better for them, right? So don't be surprised if this thing goes nuclear and if there's a dollar collapse and it's all blamed on Russia or North Korea or Iran, and people who hold dollars end up losing everything. I think that the second half of this year has a very high risk of nuclear altercations taking place. I pray it doesn't happen, and fortunately, my concerns in the past have not been borne out. I think we avoided, you know, nuclear terrorism and dirty bombs. We made it through all kinds of scenarios without nukes going off. But it doesn't mean the risk is gone. If anything, the risk seems to be heightened right now by the actions of the West, clearly provoking Russia into a more aggressive response. Anyway, bottom line is, I would say that right now is a very good time to be, well, staying strong with your preparedness activities, whatever they may be. Look, we can't track what's happening with Trump. We can't predict that, and we can't control that. Remember, it's important to understand the things that we can control. We can control our own health, our daily nutrition choices, our daily food choices, daily exercise choices, etc. We can control what we do with our money, how much you leave in dollars versus how much you safeguard in gold and silver, for example. We can control how we prepare for whatever may happen. You know, I bought some more ammo today just because of the copper tariffs. I knew that copper was going to go up a lot, and I tend to buy, like my long-range rifle rounds have, they have copper. The bullets are made largely of copper, not lead. So I knew that they were going to get a lot more expensive. So I went ahead and bought some of the 300 Win Mag rounds and some 6.5 Creedmoor. Yeah, I mean, look, we all have choices that tell us what we can control. So I say the healthy thing for us to do right now, given that the world is a whirlwind, it's unpredictable, Trump might change his mind tomorrow, who knows? I say it's good to focus on the things that we can control. Focus on being healthy. Focus on your positive mental health. Get outside every day. Get some sunshine in your life. You know, don't spend too much time on social media. It's bad for your brain. It's like junk food for your brain. And of course, don't drink Coca-Cola or any other sweetened carbonated beverage. In my view, they're all toxic. They all promote degenerative disease. So get away from all that stuff. Get off any prescription medications that you can. You know, work with your naturopath. Get healthy. Good health is going to serve you well, no matter what happens. You will always thank yourself for making positive health decisions, and you'll always thank yourself for having more gold and silver, by the way. I've noticed that in my own life. I've never regretted buying gold or silver at any price because it's always gone up eventually. You know, as the years tick by and you look back, I started buying gold in 1990, I don't know, what was it? 1993 or something. I don't regret any of those purchases. So keep buying gold and silver. Get out of fiat currency as much as you reasonably can. Take care of your health and be ready for the possibility of escalation into world war, because that very well could be coming. All right. With that said, let me just remind you of our sponsor today, which is Battalion Metals, that offers physical gold and silver. You can find them at metalswithmike.com. And you can check out all of our affiliates at rangerdeals.com. We've got affiliate deals there with discount codes for all kinds of things, from the therapeutic peptides to ballistic body armor to folding firearms and custom Glocks, chlorine dioxide, de-googled phones, all kinds of things that can help you. The 1791 gun leather there with a discount code. Really great gear to help you stay prepared. So check all of that out at rangerdeals.com. And of course, when you need food, when you need nutritional supplements or personal care products, from soap and laundry detergent and automatic dishwasher detergent even, I'm talking about green home products plus ultra clean personal care, nutrition, foods, superfoods, and storable foods, shop with us at healthrangerstore.com, and we greatly appreciate your support. All right, with that said, enjoy today's interview with Michael Yan. It's going to be interesting, and I'll be back with you tomorrow. Welcome, everybody, to this important interview with our overseas contact, Michael Yan, who is currently in Japan. I'm Mike Adams, of course, at brighteon.com. This is audio only today because of the sort of last minute nature of this. But as you'll see, we've got really important issues to cover. Welcome, Michael, to the interview today.
Hey, thanks for having me on. You were on the other day on that incredibly important vax call. That was amazing.
Yeah, that Dr. Murakami there in Japan, with his research, that they concluded that over 600,000 Japanese citizens have been killed by the jab. That's extraordinary. I mean, that's sad.
Yeah, I was listening in while you guys were talking. That's actually stunning. And Masako Gunaha has helped Dr. Murakami and others, put this thing together. And it's just growing. It's getting worse and worse, as you well know.
And the one of the big takeaways from that, well, two of them, I might as well just share with the audience, is that what the Japanese researchers found, based on 21 million vaccine records and death records associated, what they found is that the peak death risk time is from about 60 days to 120 days after the vaccine. That was shocking to me.
Right. And Masako and I, we went for a long walk a couple nights ago talking about this, that it's clear that it's a weapon, because it's not a vaccine, it's just a weapon. It's clearly designed to depopulate. If you're going to deploy and employ such a weapon, you don't want it to kill people instantly, because it'll be very obvious. I mean, the temporal difference between the shot and falling dead would be too obvious. But if you stretch that thing out, it gives you more and more deniability, while you also have plenty of time to, get as many people shot as possible. Obviously they succeeded very well in getting many people shot and boosted.
Absolutely. And the other takeaway from that is that after about 1 year, there is no additional increased risk of death from the shot versus the unvaccinated. So in other words, if you survive 1 year after taking one of those jabs, then you've made it through the risk period. I mean, that's important to know.
Very important. I'm curious, though, about the fertility rates for those who've been jabbed.
Well, right. You're correct. I'm only speaking about the death risk, but the fertility continues to decline. And then also I wanted to ask you, Dr. Bhakti has said that the cognitive decline following these vaccines is really extraordinary. And that actually leads me to the next topic I wanted to talk to you about. You may be aware that Trump just threw his entire support base under the bus over Epstein. He said that his past supporters are all hoodwinked. They're all basically morons. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, because they bought into the Epstein hoax, now Trump is calling it. And yet when he was running for president, he was calling out the Democrats for not releasing the Epstein files. How can Trump even think he's going to get away with this unless so many people are dumbed down from the jab? You know what I'm saying? What are your thoughts?
Well, Trump, I mean, for those who've followed my work for years, they know that I've trusted Trump for a total of 0 days still.
And, that's and I've been, true.
And I've been very clear about that since before the first election, when Newt Gingrich called me up in my office one day in Thailand. It was like 10 years ago or something. And he was trying to rummage up support for Trump. And I'm like, nope. You know, I mean, I'm not going to vote for a Clinton, but I don't trust Trump. There's just something about him. You know, you can spot, you know, when it comes to spotting personalities, you can spot, you know, your likeness, and you can spot your opposite. And with Trump, I was spotting my opposite, and I realized that that guy is a traitor. And there's nothing about him that I trust. I've never trusted him. It's only gotten worse. And it's all turned out to be accurate. And now, of course, many people will say, well, what choice did we have? I mean, we had to pick the worst of the evils, which is actually a false choice. It's actually what they want you to think, that you only had a choice between this one or that one, red pill or blue pill, from some guy whose name you never knew. And, you know, I mean, that in and of itself is another layer of the trickery, to think that you only have two choices when there were actually other people for running for president. But even if the other people had no chance of winning the presidency, you still should not actually support anybody who's actually trying to kill you, right? And as we know, both sides are trying. We have this habit of, you know, once we pick a side and say, if we pick a side, but let's say we do pick a side, and we pick side A, right? So, and so now that, you know, people get behind side A, they have this tendency to lionize that person, uh-huh. to say, okay, this is our hero, and to treat that person like a hero when that person is not a hero at all. In fact, that person is covering up Epstein Island now. He's covering up the death jabs. He's still sticking with the death jabs, and we're in, you know, mid 2025 at this point. I mean, that's inexcusable. I mean, some people will say, well, beyond the death jab, you know, what else, what other problem do you have with Trump? I'm like, what do you mean beyond the death jab? What other problem do you have? You know what I mean? It's like, besides being a Nazi death camp operator for, you know, 5 years, and what else did our client do that, you know, that makes you upset? And he doesn't have to do anything else whatsoever. Uh-huh. And that's enough right there. And you know, as you were on that call the other day with the 21 million records that they've assembled here in Japan. I'm in Japan, and Dr. Murakami and his team and Masako Gunaha, you know, were presenting that. You were on the call, and they're saying 600,000 Japanese are dead from this. That's just Japanese. That doesn't include Americans and Canadians and Thai people, and Panamanians are heavily jabbed. The Panamanians were locked down like wild. I mean, and, you know, just like Australia was as well, Kiwi land, all across Europe. I mean, the death toll must be in the significant millions.
Well, I hate to bring up this painful chapter of history, but the deaths in Japan from this jab, which is primarily an American invention, these deaths, the number of deaths exceed the deaths from Nagasaki and Hiroshima in World War II.
They do. And at this point, as this continues to unfold, and they continue to come out with more jabs of different sorts. You know, we went, Dr. Murakami and Masako and I, about, I don't know, a year and a half ago, we went up to another plant up in Fukushima Prefecture, where they're going to, where they are now rolling out more these Replicon jabs. These Replicons, as you know, because you talked with Dr. Murakami about, I don't know, maybe a year ago, right? Or 8 months
right.
ago.
Yep.
And he, you know, and you and Dr. Murakami were talking about how these things, you know, somebody gets the jab from the Replicon, and now people even that did not get the jab suddenly are infected by it. It spreads like a disease, and they're rolling those out now. They're clearly genociding us. That's like nakedly obvious. They say it, actually. It's not conspiracy theory. At this point, the people that still think that's conspiracy theory, I don't know. Maybe they're jabbed and their cognitive decline is causing them not to be able to see it. I don't know what the causality is.
Well, there's a lot of cult-like behavior in the Trump camp right now. I want to even mention that and ask you to respond to it. But where there's this whole group of people who are more connected to the Trump establishment who are telling everybody else, shut up, stop talking about the Epstein files. And then the rest of us are saying, wait a second, you're asking us to stay silent on pedophilia and human sex trafficking of children. And this is what MAGA now means. So to be MAGA, you have to be pro-pedophile and pro-child trafficking? Really? I mean, that's what it has come to. And it's bizarre.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's not bizarre to me at all. I mean, because I expected these things and I've been saying it out loud many, many times. And you've been calling them out hardcore as well. But the, you know, the BBB bill, you know, what are the big, beautiful bill or whatever they call it? That's a clear sign, just calling it BBB, that it is World Economic Forum agenda. I mean, straight up. I mean, you know, when Ava Vlardingerbroek and I were on with Jordan Peterson, I don't know, 2 years ago or 3 years ago over in Netherlands, you know, there was a party called the Bodemburger Beweging, if my Dutch is okay, which is means Farmers People's Movement. Bodemburger Beweging, right?
Yep.
And so they're campaign signs all over the Netherlands. I drove all over the place looking, you know, talking with farmers and whatnot. But those campaign signs were BB better, you know,
yep.
And it's literally BB better. And the first sign that I saw, it took me like 5 seconds to go, they're telling you who they are. They are World Economic Forum. And so, you know, I talked with a lot of the farmers. One of them, his name's Joran. He's a dairy farmer that Masako and I know. In fact, he's a farm protest leader for the farmers. And Joran was very sold on the BBB because he thought that they were honestly representing the farmers. And I kept saying, Joran, it's not. Look, it's on their signs, man. It's like the Monty Python. Look at its teeth, you know, with the killer rabbit, you know. And
yeah.
Anyway, the Bodemburger Beweging, the BBB, BBB better, they got a lot of votes. They took a lot of seats and they got a lot of power. And they did exactly what Ava Vlardingerbroek and I warned about. They did it. They started ripping into the farmers and doing. And that's this whole BBB. You know, build the big, beautiful bill is going to be the same thing, you know, because he's signaling what I mean. He is not on our side. He's just an enemy. He is a Trojan horse. Trump.
Well, that's becoming increasingly clear. And let me shift to the next thing that Trump just announced. I'd like to get your reaction to this, because now we're dealing with international trade and geopolitics. So Trump says that if Russia doesn't agree to a ceasefire, and we don't know the terms of a ceasefire, but Russia has already said we're not going to agree to any ceasefire, because the West would just use that to rearm. And we know from watching what happened to Iran that when Trump says the U.S. is negotiating with a country, they're actually using negotiations as a deception to bomb or attack that country, right? So the U.S. is incapable of negotiating in good faith. But if Trump doesn't sign the ceasefire, we're told, in 50 days, the U.S. is going to put 100% secondary tariffs on all the countries that purchase oil from Russia. And that includes somehow the United States. I mean, the U.S. purchases energy from Russia, but of course, China, India, Turkey, and the EU all purchase energy from Russia. So, Michael, do you think that we're going to actually see in 50 days 100% tariffs on the EU and India and Turkey? I mean, what the hell is go ahead.
I wouldn't doubt it because he's clearly trying to destroy the United States. And so, you know, this is and by the way, what they're doing with the negotiations, so-called negotiations, it's what the Chinese call ta-ta-tan-tan, right? It means fight, fight, talk, talk, right? Mao used to say things like that. And so, you know, back before the first shots were fired in the Ukraine war, you know, the Russia and Ukraine were having talks and people said, okay, they've solved it. And I'm like, no, no, no. And I published straight up, this is ta-ta, tan-tan, right? That's a clear talk-talk and they're about to fight. And they did because it was obvious. They were showing all the signs that they were about to fight, like moving tanks to the border, you know, and just, you know, of course you'd never know that maybe they would have called it off, but they didn't. And they're fighting. And the biggest battles of the whole war are unfolding now, right? So we're deeply into it. Now it's clear that Trump is destroying the United States and he's doing it with great intent. You know, obviously he pushed the death jabs. I mean, you would never do that to your own people unless you were trying to, you know, kill them. And
he really forced it on the military.
He did. He forced it on the military. And, you know, he's listening to Eric Carrillo. I knew Eric. I did 5 months of combat with him. He's the Central Command commander right now, commanding general. And, you know, I'm you know, hearing that he's doing all these private briefings with Trump. And, you know, Eric, I know him well. I mean, I did 5 months of combat with him. I mean, like right with him, side by side in, you know, like in the same firefights, shoulder to shoulder. I mean, I was there with a camera. So I've got him in many, I've got him in many firefights and bombings and everything else when he was the commander of a 124th Infantry Regiment, regiment in Mosul, Iraq. He was a great commander back then. But now he is gone. He was a huge vax pusher. And that was when I had a hard break with Eric. I'm like, that's it. You know, that'll be enough. I mean, you know, there's nobody gets a break on the jab. Nobody. And not even Eric Carrillo. And that's very sad, actually. But now he, you know, he's, according to the Israelis, he's, you know, Israel's favorite general. And it's almost as if Eric now represents Israel, not the United States.
Yeah, the word is he gets his intel straight from Mossad. And he's pushing the whole narrative that, and I called this up front. I said right after the bombing of Iran, I said the very next day, you just wait. Before long, Israel will say that America failed to destroy the uranium, and Israel will start to call for a new bombing of Iran. Sure enough, that just came out over the last few days. I mean, the playbook is so obvious at this point.
Oh, it's ta-ta-tan-tan. That's what it is. The war is not over. You know, the so-called 12-day war, which is a farce. I'm like, this is ta-ta-tan-tan. This is a huge war. The magnitude of this war, I think, is too large for most people's minds to even comprehend. And how far back it goes in history. Even military officers, you know, I'm on these various calls with the and some of the even higher ranking, now retired, don't actually understand how actually serious this is and how deep it is. This is way beyond Israel's security. I mean, anybody that thinks that this is about Israel's security has zero idea of what's going on at all. This is about Israel itself is a puppet in the larger war, in the much larger war. They're a puppet. And, you know, this is, you know, I got these series of four books. It's called Hanway's Travels. It's from 1754. And I was just had them up in my library looking at them last night. And you know, it's talking about the Caspian and the Armenians and the Persians and the Russians. And this is 1754. I should send that to you, Michael. And you'll see the things that he was writing in 1754. again, change the names, change the dates. It's what's happening right now, right? I mean, same players, Caspian Sea, of course, is so vital. The routes for the Russians and the Persians and the Turks, and it's all the same players doing the same stuff. What I'm getting to is this is nothing new, and it's not about save the Jews type thing. That's not what's going on. It's about routes and resources, right? Some of those resources are human resources. I've probably got a dozen books up in my library upstairs that are about depopulation. Some of these books are from the 1800s, right? And they're telling you how to depopulate. They're telling you, like in France and different places. This is old stuff. This is old stuff that the big players like the Venetians and the Mongols, working together, these sorts of things. It's not about Israel. Israel is a major player, of course, but it's the Zionist, actually. Let's say Israel itself is more of that's strategic land right there. The reason that Israel even exists as a country now is because it's strategic. It's near the Suez Canal and it's near other things. And right now, of course, in more recent times, they've discovered all that energy. And of course, the Indo-European corridor will go right through, from Mumbai, India over through some of the countries like UAE and Saudi and come through Jordan there and come right through Israel. Right. And so there's and possibly the Ben Gurion Canal and that sort of thing. So, I mean, this is routes and resources. And I would not doubt that we will see Strait of Hormuz get closed. I don't know if it's going to happen, obviously, but I would not doubt it that if the Strait of Hormuz gets closed and we do it, actually, just like we did Nord Stream, and that we blame it on Iran as caused us belly to go really hog wild on them, because obviously we don't want to have our fingerprints on closing the Strait of Hormuz, because that would really not sit well with the Saudis and the Qataris and the Bahrainis, and we got our Fifth Fleet headquarters there in Bahrain. I've been inside of it before with right. The commander and Secretary Gates, actually, he took me there. But the Kuwaitis and the Iraqis, nobody's going to be happy if we close the Strait of Hormuz. But notice that we haven't touched the Iranian Navy, but we keep seeing this information campaign that the Iranian Navy may be preparing to mine the Strait of Hormuz or whatever, it's pretty obvious that we're setting the information conditions that we can close it. That would be, obviously Iran doesn't want to close the Strait of Hormuz. Why would that be like that? A lot of people still believe that the Russians blew up Nord Stream, which is just like, you can't insane. Even make up this right. stuff, right. Iran, of course, would never want to close the Strait of Hormuz unless all of their infrastructure was destroyed. And that was their Samson option. But of course, China, and I'm here in Japan, if the Strait of Hormuz gets closed, Misako and I are going to stop everything we're doing and prepare for shortages here. I mean, that's what,
no
if it's
kidding.
Closed for any significant length of time, it's going to have a significant impact on Japan, right?
Let me
bring this in. So Trump recently slapped 25% tariffs on Japan, and which I've called that insane. Why would you punish your allies with 25% tariffs? He's got a 30% tariff on the EU. He's got a 50% tariff on Brazil and also tariffs on South Korea and other allies. It's like Trump, I've said this before, but I'd love your reaction to it. Trump is enacting an international embargo against the United States. It's like what the U.S. Navy did to Japan in World War II. Now Trump is doing it to America. It's kind of like it's an act of war against the U.S. economy to cut off all supply chains to the U.S. I mean, how else do you describe it?
It all makes sense when you realize Trump is helping to destroy the United States, and he's doing it methodically and with great intent. Not that he's the guy that's smart enough to make this plan. The the, you know, the players that are doing this are, you know, Trump is just a, he's just a condom. He's not the big player. He's, you know, he can come and go. He's like a leaf on an autumn tree. He'll be gone soon enough, and then somebody else will replace him. And but so Trump, again, he is just a face, right? He's not the guy doing this, but this is about destruction of the United States. I want to reiterate, the war that's been going on for a long time is much, much bigger and much deeper than most people, I think, would even fathom to believe. It is significant. It's not, you know, the president of the United States is obviously not really in charge. I mean, that's really, really nakedly obvious, right? But he's, you know, in 2014, I was there in Thailand. I had an office there. And, you know, there was a lot of fighting in 2014, a lot of casualties. I was in it right in the middle of it. And, you know, they were trying to overthrow the government. And the ambassador that we had there, her name was Christy Kinney, the U.S. ambassador to Thailand. Her, you know, the embassy had a giant embassy in Bangkok. And because, you know, that used to be our big operation center for all of that part of Asia, right? And so Christy Kinney, that was our ambassador. She was doing so many things which were, at first I thought she was just amazingly stupid or inept, actually. But over time, and in fact, if you web search my name and Christy Kinney, you'll see all kinds of articles, and especially if you can type in Thai, you'll see many articles in the Thai language about my big public fights with Christy Kinney, because, you know, I'm quite well known in Thailand because of some of the things I've done over there. And I was fighting her and saying, why are you doing this? Thailand is our most important ally in Southeast Asia by far. And our most important ally in the world is clearly Japan, which is where I'm sitting at right now, which mm-hmm. is not a coincidence, right? And it's not a coincidence I spent so much time in Thailand. These are incredibly important partners. But she was clearly sabotaging our relationship with over time, I started to realize she's just sabotaging our relationship. I'll give you one example. One time, Christy Kinney, she was, it was like she did these videos. It was like the Christy Kinney show almost. And she was with the mail. She was in the mail room of the U.S. Embassy in Bangkok, right? You could probably find this online. So she's got photos of herself and people in the mail room, like congratulating them for doing a good job. Like, you can't even make up this stuff. That's the mail room of the U.S. Embassy in Bangkok. You should not be publishing who they are with their pictures, right? And so right. I wrote her a letter. I did it publicly as if it came from the MSS chief in Beijing. MSS is the Ministry of State Security. It's the Chinese Central Intelligence Agency, right? So I wrote this letter. You could probably find it online. And I said, thank you very much. This is so-and-so from the MSS in Beijing. And we really appreciate that you just showed us who all works in your mailroom. We'll be inviting them to Bali and places like that soon. You know, I mean, this is the kind of idiocy she was doing on a regular basis. And then we saw the U.S. ambassador here in Japan doing similar, and then an ambassador in India doing similar, clearly sabotaging our relationships, doing things that were very insulting to local people that a good ambassador just never would do. Uh-huh. So you see this demolition in subtle ways that most people won't quite see because they're busy at home in Texas or Oklahoma or Florida, and they don't know what's going on with our State Department in Thailand or what they're doing down in Panama to destroy our relations with Panama, flying the rainbow flag at the U.S. Embassy in Panama. The Panamanians don't like that stuff. They like their families. They don't like their kids, you know, being told that they need to do a sex change, you know, and so this is the kind of thing that happens downrange that you really only see it while you're out on the ground. But it's clear that Trump is intentionally dismantling the United States. He's destroying it. He's hoodwinked MAGA, and they've been duped.
So, all right. So some of the mechanisms of that destruction are, like I just said, an economic embargo against the United States that Trump is putting in place by calling it secondary tariffs. That's going to cut off all the supply chains. And Michael, we were about to purchase a very expensive piece of equipment from Italy. It's only made in Italy. It's for our warehouse automation. It would help us be a lot more efficient. You can't buy it in the United States. You can't buy it in China. You can't buy it anywhere except Italy. Now Trump just put another 30% tariff on that. We can't possibly afford it now, right? So we're already experiencing the cutoff of the global supply chains. But my question to you, Michael, is who's giving Trump these orders? Who is this? Or what family or what cabal or you know, who's above Trump that's giving him the marching orders here?
That's the big question. It's clearly oligarchical structures, but who's at the lead of this? It's not Bill Gates and those sort of things. Those are still sub puppets as well. You know, a billionaire is not that wealthy compared to the you know, Rockefeller type level, right? I mean, right. We're talking big boys here. You know, the kind of people that can buy, you know, ports with pocket lint, you know, this has been going on for centuries, and it's nothing new. It's just at a much more intense level than it's ever been. I mean, we were born at interesting times. How'd that Chinese proverb go? Well, that's us. And now who's actually giving Trump orders? I don't know. I mean, it's clear that he's, you know, within the Zionist architecture, but how powerful are actually the Zionists compared to whoever else is out there in the jungle? You know, when I was out there in Darien Gap in Panama with Brett Weinstein, and he said something like, you know, to me, you know, Brett's a very smart guy. He's always trying to get to the bottom of things. He did his PhD work down in Panama, actually. And you know, and he said something like, you know, you keep saying they, who is they? And I'm like, I don't know, Brett. I mean, who runs this jungle? I mean, I don't really know who runs the jungle. But I know it's a jungle, and I know it's an intense place. And I know some of the players, like the Chinese Communist Party, led by Xi, of course. But there's oligarchical structures underneath that as well, right? In Russia, it's not just Putin. It's the oligarchs as well, right? So he's got it. And so, you know, in the World Economic Forum is like a, you know, a place where, you know, you get a lot of these other disparate oligarchical structures together and cooperate. Now, keep in mind, China and Russia have been working hard on the SCO, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which is like the other NATO. And that, you know, they're, you know, trying to bunch up the structures there in Asia, of course. You got some powerful people in places like, or at least very wealthy people in places like Thailand, right? And very important. Thailand is key terrain right there. A lot of people don't get that. They don't understand what our grandparents understood, how important places like Thailand actually are, right? And Thailand is being dismantled. That's clear. I've spent a lot of time there. I've been all over that country. I've been, you know, flying around with the prime minister and that sort of thing. I've been out with at the rocket festivals. I spent years running around Thailand. That's how important it is. And you know, that now the Chinese are building a canal through Cambodia off of the Mekong River that'll go into the Gulf of Thailand. And as they build a train that'll go across the Kra Isthmus from the Gulf of Thailand over into the Indian Ocean. I've got map sheets in my head, so I'm sorry for those who aren't tracking on the geography that I'm talking about. I've literally got like atlases in my mind, you know, because I'm always out there on the ground. But anyway, that'll allow China to bypass the Strait of Malacca, you know, of the seven major naval choke points. You know, of course, you know, that railway that China just opened with Tehran, that's part of the BRI, uh-huh, the Belt Road Initiative. That railroad goes down into Thailand too, and it's going to go across the Kra Isthmus, which is like sort of like Panama Canal of Thailand. They don't have a canal there. They've been thinking about that for centuries, but it's a little bit harder than the Panama Canal, which is really hard. So nobody has built a canal there yet. They've thought about it and started to go for it at times, but never really quite kicked it off. Okay. But they're building the railway right now.
All right. Okay. And again, routes and resources, and I would also add currencies too, because the U.S. is burning up its dollar reputation very, very rapidly. Let me read for you something that President Xi of China just said in a recent meeting with Sergei Lavrov of Russia, trying to get the pronunciation correct there, Lavrov. She said, quote, China and Russia are not building an alliance. We are building a new global reality. The West must either adapt or disappear. And he said the West wants others to live in perpetual poverty so that their banks remain rich. And we do not seek to rule over the world, only to liberate it from those who believe they own it. So, you know, fascinating, very aggressive words, which China is normally very reserved, obviously. What do you make of that statement from Xi?
Well, you know, it's not a coincidence that a lot of people are jumping for the gold right now. And actually, if you go back to the Mongol and Venetian times, this is the sort of stuff that was going on back then, you know, when Marco Polo headed over to China in the 1300s, right? And he brought the paper, he brought the first fiat back to the Europe from China, right? You know, he was, you know, he got that idea from the Chinese. And it's quite fascinating that the things that were going on back then are the things that are going on now. They you know, they had these trade routes, and the Venetians were using the Mongols to be their enforcers and knock off their competition. Like, you know, if other trade centers started to pop up, the Mongols would get in there and, you know, pillage them, right? I mean, that's what's going on right now. And, you know, routes and resources, of course, that's what we've got. But again, one of the things that's really important is there clearly are some of the oligarchical structures that want to put us in famine. That's crystal clear. The question is, how will they affect this? How can they make it happen? And they've been setting conditions now for years. One is like Nord Stream, Groningen gas field, you know, disrupting fertilizer production, you know, the H5N1, screw worms, just a long list, right? And also they've made these invasion routes that are quite effective now, like Darien Gap, which is closed down for the moment. However, it can instantly reopen. But it's clear that, you know, that the beast, I call it, is setting conditions for famines. Now, if there are famines, now keep in mind, I have a whole, in my library, I've got a bunch of books about how to create famines, and this stuff goes back centuries, right? So this is like Victorian famines that the British would do. This isn't like, you know, hocus pocus stuff. No, this is straight up warfare. This is like, you know, mayhem naval type stuff, but it's, you know, famine instead, right? I mean, so yeah. this is a well-known strategy in war, and it's very effective, and it's very clear that they're doing this. What would I do if I were in the power positions that they're in, and I wanted to create famines, and I wanted to create maximum chaos? I would do things like close Strait of Hormuz and blame it on the Iranians. I would do, and that's easy to do. And remember, we haven't shut down their Navy. Why haven't we destroyed the Iranian Navy when we're alleging that they may mine the Strait of Hormuz? See, that doesn't make sense, right? Uh-huh. That's, unless maybe we're going to close the Strait of Hormuz. You see, of course, the Houthis have sank a couple of ships recently, and which is obviously affecting a lot of the traffic through Bab el Mandab and the Suez. And of course, a lot of that traffic can go around Africa, but that costs a lot more and adds time and cost and that sort of thing. Now, what would I do? If I really wanted to create huge famines, I would do things like cut Nord Stream, cut Groningen, cut a lot of other things like that. I would close the Strait of Hormuz. I would close Suez, Strait of Malacca. I would close the Panama Canal without destroying it. Right? That's what I would do. I would close those down for some period of time and turn off electricity, you know, shut off as much grid as I could shut off. Right? I would do things like that. If I were the devil, Paul, if I were Paul Harvey saying, if I were the devil, uh-huh. I would shut those, maybe the Bosphorus and that sort of thing, of course, actually definitely that, and Strait of Gibraltar, but certainly Suez and certainly Hormuz, Malacca and Panama, because if you shut those things down for any significant amount of time, that's going to cause some problems. You're going to definitely create some famines, as you know, that's going to create massive problems. And one thing about famines is you generally, in almost all cases, the government that's in charge when the famine happens will not be the government in charge after the famine. You know, I've got a book upstairs called The Hungry 40s, and that book is about the 1840s when there were famines across Europe, and it caused a lot. It's very interesting. They call it the Hungry 40s, but, you know, it caused a lot of changes in government. But, you know, that's why, again, famine is a huge weapon in war. But if you want to dissolve all the borders, dissolve all the power, you know, dissolve a lot of the power structures, I would create global famines. I mean, if I were the devil, right? Wish to reduce the population.
It seems like, you know, what you're describing, global famine, it's also going along with global depopulation via the jabs, which also Trump continues to defend and push, and also global infertility. Now, all of these appear to be attacks on human populations or human civilization, right? Now, my question to you, Michael, and I apologize if this is too far out, because you normally don't touch on these topics, but is it possible, have you ever considered the possibility that these marching orders might be coming either from a rogue AI or an extraterrestrial AI or something that is not of human origin?
I doubt it. And the reason why I say that is I wish you could see my library and how much time I spend with books and looking through history and studying these things for years and years. And it's just nothing new. It's nothing new at all. I'm not seeing any. I should send you. I wish you could see my 1754 set, actually, you know, in the Caspian Sea, or just a long list of books that I've, you know, either read completely or stabbed through and read parts of. And it's a lot over the years. And I'm not really seeing anything new at all, other than, you know, we've got new computers and things like that. But none of this, using famine or using, you know, like the Venetian oligarchs using the Mongols as their enforcers. You know, that was, a long time ago, right? And, the Mongol hordes, they were enforcers. So they were working together to knock over towns and kingdoms and that sort of thing. And that was all about trade, right? Now, from the ground perspective, it looks like it's just the Mongols going crazy. But in reality, it was the Mongols and the Venetians working together. And so these sorts of things, it's common. It's normal. It doesn't mean it's good. If we want to talk about actual vaccines, these books I have from the 1800s on vaccines, one of them's from smallpox, 1889, I think is the book, or 1882, I don't remember. But anyway, you know, if you read that book, all you have to do is change the names and the dates and everything's the same. You know, it's like, you know,
that's wild.
I mean, it's like word for word, you know, COVID, right? You know, the smallpox vaccine, that it's not helping and it's killing people and it's impinging on our freedoms. It's like word for word. And we're talking the 1880s.
Wow.
Right.
So, all right. So the same history, just sort of modernized. But one difference is that since the 1990s, today, you've got countries like Iran and Yemen that have proven they have very capable missiles or ocean drones, or even ballistic missiles in the case of Iran. They did quite a number on Israel. They bombed the smithereens out of Tel Aviv for 12 days, and I have a feeling that's not over yet. Can you talk to us about how you see the dynamic really shifting? Because, you know, in Desert Storm, the U.S. had absolute dominance over, you know, militarily, over everything. Today, that doesn't seem to be the case. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, now, the basics of what's happening, the morphology of what's happening is basically the same. But the size and the intensity, that's not the same. Obviously, now we've got intercontinental ballistic missiles and nuclear weapons and lasers from space and all kinds of things, you know, and untold weapons. I don't even know what's out there. And obviously the drones are becoming incredibly capable. But the basic ideas, and I think we're going to see more of it. And I think this war, again, wars are kind of easy to predict if you stick to a few basics. One is Wars grow. That's highly predictable. They grow unpredictably, right?
Right.
As this one is doing, it's growing unpredictably. They predictably grow unpredictably. And they last longer than people expect, right? And often the winners and losers are not what people expected, right? But keep in mind, when you step back from this very far and get more of an orbital view, there's always players in the background, like the so-called bankers, who are doing big stuff from a distance, action at a distance, with big gold, right? Usually gold and sometimes silver. And they're, you know, BIS, the Bank of International Settlements, made gold a tier one asset in recent times. I read a good book on that called The Tower of Basel. Not the Tower of Babel, but the Tower of Basel. It's about the formation of the BIS. Very interesting story. And it talks about the book, The Tower of Basel. Again, not Babel, but Basel, because it's in Basel, Switzerland.
Okay.
The Tower of Basel talks about how the BIS actually helped steal, I think it was Czechoslovakian gold, actually. And I think, who did they give it to? I've forgotten. I'm sorry. But it may have been actually Germany. And so, yeah, I think they did. I think they stole the Czech gold and gave it to Germany. I'd have to look in the book again. But anyway, the point is they were... They're just doing these things, you know. They're doing big stuff, and they don't care about the Nazis. They don't care about Jews. They don't care about it. It's all about money and power. It's about something much more fundamental to them. It's Machiavellian on a, you know, grand scale.
Yeah, well, clearly that's the case, and we're all caught in the middle of this. The hard part for people to understand here is, how do you have any sense of predictability about what's next, especially with Trump? Because every day, literally every day, he says something just completely out of the blue that sounds crazy. You know, like, oh, the Epstein files are a total hoax. But the day before, his daughter, I believe, Laura Trump, was saying, oh, we decided we're gonna respond to our base and we're going to release Epstein files. And then the very next day, Trump says it's a total hoax. And same thing with the tariffs. It's like, you know how Trump got the nickname Taco, right? I call it Trump Taco Tuesday. TACO, Trump always chickens out Taco.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Taco. So I call That's it classy. Taco Tuesday. Yeah. Orange Taco Tuesday. And so Trump saying, oh, we're going to slap 100% tariffs on China. And then Ford calls the White House and says, hey, we can't make cars. We ran out of neodymium magnets from China. And Trump's like, oh, okay, well, we got to back down on that, you know? And it's like, oh my God, how does anybody navigate this?
I think Trump's quite predictable, actually. And I've been saying this for a long time. If your paradigm is, if you've got a working paradigm that's actually working and usable, then you should not be surprised by anything. If you're surprised, something's either wrong with your paradigm or your input information is either muddy or it's not accurate, right? Now, in my paradigm, Trump is a traitor, and he's doing everything he can to destroy the United States. And that is a highly predictable paradigm. If you just experiment with that for a month or two, you'll see how accurate it is. How unsurprised you are by anything that he does, and it's highly predictive. And like, for instance, this law that was passed on the 287G, which is the Department of Homeland Security's ability. Anyway, it deals with deporting people, right? I'll skip the details, but anyway, in Texas, I just left Texas. I almost said here in Texas, but back in Texas, you know, a law got passed about, I don't know, 6 weeks ago or yeah, about maybe 6 weeks ago. And on 287G on how Texas, you know, I think you've covered this or you and I talked about it. And as soon as that law got passed there in Texas, Trump congratulated them and said, I'll be watching you. It was on his Truth Social, right? And a lot of my friends in Texas said, see, look, he's actually doing something positive. But in fact, the law that they passed in Texas was the worst possible law out of all the bills that were there to be considered, right? They passed the one that was the worst for Texas and for the United States when it comes to doing mass deportations, right? But Trump came out on his Truth Social and he goes, great job, Texas, you passed this great law. And everybody goes, yay, they did it, you know, but it's BBB, it's Build Back Better type stuff, right? The big, beautiful bill, right? He is clearly a traitor and he's clearly, he pushed the death jab. What else more is there to say beyond that, right? And so if you experiment with the paradigm that he's just a traitor, he's destroying the United States, and he's destroying our important allies like Japan and Thailand, if he can, and many of the others. Of course, he'll focus more on, you know, the big players like, of course, Germany. They're up on the ropes, man. Germany's not doing well at all. And, of course, you know, we destroyed Nord Stream. And as I've said with you before, there's only two suspects who destroyed Nord Stream, and Russians aren't one of them. The only two suspects, the only two viable suspects are the United States or Martians. It was either Americans or space aliens, right? We destroyed Nord Stream. It was very clear that we did it, right? And why did we do that? Well, I mean, I can list the reasons, actually, if you want to talk about about keeping Russia separate from Germany. That's been a desire of the English for a long time, right? Yeah. And Mackinder, we're going back to Halford Mackinder stuff, right? You know, if Germany has really cheap energy, their manufacturing will, you know, be dominant, and their economy will grow, and yada yada. One thing led to another. Nord Stream got blown up, right? So at the end of the day, Europe is being deindustrialized. Now, one thing that's important: floods. Where are all these floods coming from, right?
Yeah, I want to ask you.
You know, you just had one near you, right? And now a lot of water infrastructure is being removed, such as in Europe, and I don't know what water structure may or may not have been removed in the United States, but in Europe, they're removing water infrastructure without telling people, right? And so it's setting people up for catastrophe, obviously, right? Mm-hmm. And in fact, there's a website, which I've published a couple times, which you could easily find by web searching, like water infrastructure removal Europe, right? And you'll see that there's a website where they're bragging about, we're, you know, basically returning it to the bears and the beavers and the wolves and that sort of thing. So it's not just that places like Ireland and all of Europe is being invaded by Africa and Asia. It's that also water infrastructure is being removed. And so you're going to end up, even with all these people that are invading to genocide the Europeans and Americans and Canadians and Aussies and Japanese. There's a lot of them coming in here into Japan as well. It's not like the World Economic Forum and all those guys want a bunch of Haitians running around the United States. They're going to genocide them too. That's clear. That's crystal clear. And so it'll, you know, the first object is they have to take out people like us who are not going kindly. We don't want to be their slaves, and we don't make good slaves. We're, you know, I'm Scots-Irish culture, and Scots-Irish are the most terrible slaves on earth. I mean, they're just not good at being slaves, and we don't like kings and that sort of thing, and it's just part of the firmware. But they, you know, they'll use these invaders to come in and wipe out the Irish, which is happening, and in so many other countries. And then, of course, the people, those invaders, will be destroyed, and they'll okay. keep their children as they'll keep the ones that they want and throw away the ones that they don't want. They can throw them away. They can kill them as they wish.
All right. So let me ask you this question. We're getting close to the end of our interview here. I appreciate your time very much. You already answered the extraterrestrial AI question. You say that's not even necessary to explain this because we've seen all this before in history. But one thing that is now completely different that has never happened before in history is the actual rise of capable AI robots and AI software agents that for the first time in human history can replace humans competently What do you think that factor means? In other words, is that part of the calculus of whoever's behind this thinking that, well, we just don't need humans as much anymore?
Clearly. I mean, they say it clearly. I mean, they say it. And you know, a lot of the people in the World Economic Forum, they want to reduce humans. That's why they do all these, you know, gayification programs, trying to make the children gay and whatnot, you know, reducing the population so that fertility drops down for so many causes. They want to replace us. They want to replace us first with, you know, invading our countries with people from places like Africa, Asia, and then killing them off as well. And then whatever's left, they'll keep whatever humans they want. And then the rest they can do with machines.
So any idea what number of humans they want to depopulate? I mean, this gets back to the vaccines. You know, they've killed 600,000 Japanese. They've killed at least 1.5 million Americans. They've killed 20 million around the world just with those jabs alone. And there's more on the way. But what do you think this means about, are there target levels of remaining populations or anything like that that you're aware of?
I don't know what they really want to reach it down to. Do they want to get it down to 600 million or so? I don't know. Of course, there's been talk about the numbers, but I don't know what their end state goal is. Of course, they're going to need enough. I mean, these are serious people. They know how to do the math, right? They're going to need enough people to continue to work on their technology and to go forward with the sorts of ways that they want to live. I think one of the problems that a lot of the globalists have, though, is that it is a multiplayer game and that there are Chinese out there and there are Russians out there and Iranians that don't want to play, right? They don't want to play like how the Zionists want to play, right? They don't want to play the way that oligarchical structure plays. The Zionists, of course, they're amorphous. They have different groups within the Zionist, but you know, there's a lot of people that they're going to fight each other. And how is that going to end up? Is it going to end up in nuclear combat? If it does, then we don't have to worry about AI, that's for sure. I don't know how it's going to end up. Nobody does.
Yeah, good point. All right, share with our audience how they can follow you. You're on Substack and X and elsewhere. Go ahead.
Right, I'm on Substack and X. And actually, mostly what I do is help other people get out there in the field and planting mustard seeds. But I'm on Substack pretty often. So you can find me on Substack with my name, Michael Yon, Yankee Oscar November, Y-O-N.
All right. MichaelYon.substack.com. And then on X, it's Michael_Yon.
Yes, correct, sir.
Okay. Okay. Great. Yep. All right, that's Michael. Right. Thank you for staying up late. You're in Japan. You're up late. We really appreciate your analysis. And I don't know. Pray for humanity. What do we, you know, what do we do here? This is not looking good. But I appreciate your time.
I'm weirdly not afraid, and weirdly still happy. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, we're going to God, and that's it. And there's, you know, be not afraid. I'm just not afraid. We're just going to keep resisting this thing. And somebody's going to win and somebody's going to lose.
Yeah, I don't feel fear about this either. Just uncertainty. But like you, you know, you and I are both people who are highly, highly adaptive. And we're trying to help other people be similarly adaptive so they can navigate this. Yeah, I agree with you. We don't have to face the future with fear. We're just trying to figure it out so we can navigate it. That's all. But thank you, Michael, for your time.
That's right.
Much appreciated. All right. Stay connected here. Yep. Don't disconnect yet. But thank all of you for listening. Mike Adams here with Brighteon.com interviewing Michael Yon. Feel free to share this everywhere. And thank you for listening. Take care. Thank you for supporting us at healthrangerstore.com. And we've got a new batch of turmeric in stock now. After a long search, the supply chains are really becoming more difficult. And turmeric, as you know, is often contaminated with lead. So, of course, we do mass spec elemental testing for lead, cadmium, you know, arsenic, mercury, and other elements. We found an ultra clean batch and we have it available for you now. I have it on my desk. We've got turmeric root powder. Certified organic, laboratory tested, identity confirmed, all that
E. coli tested, microbiology, you name it. We've got it all for you at healthrangerstore.com. We do not have turmeric tincture back in stock. We're working on that, but we do have the turmeric root powder. And as you know, I include turmeric root powder in my own smoothie, which is why it's orange. It's why my dental work turns orange, which freaks out the dental hygienist as well. But that's another story. Okay, so if you want really good, high-quality, ultra-clean turmeric root powder, we've got it now, healthrangerstore.com. We also have, yeah, there's the screen showing it to you. We also have astaxanthin. Astaxanthin, Hawaiian astaxanthin, we have it right now in stock. Of course, this is known as the king of carotenoids. This is a fat-soluble, super-potent antioxidant. And it's got a multitude of uses and benefits and support mechanisms for human health. Athletes use it. Lots of people use it. This is also what turns the flesh of salmon slightly pink. That's actually the astaxanthin that they're getting from their dietary sources. And it's believed to help support the natural athleticism and the endurance and stamina of salmon. That's just one of the many benefits of the king of carotenoids. Now, astaxanthin is in a dark bottle because it's sensitive to light, but it's very potent. You only need either 2 or 4 milligrams per day. We've got that available for you right now, healthrangerstore.com. We also have a supply of NAC in stock, N-acetylcysteine, which of course helps support the body's normal detoxification process with outstanding liver support and glutathione and so much more. So check it all out at healthrangerstore.com. Turmeric root powder, astaxanthin capsules, as well as NAC, all in stock right now, plus hundreds of other items that are also certified organic, laboratory tested, non-GMO. And we don't use synthetic, you know, colors, fragrances, fillers, garbage, none of that stuff. Nothing like that. Ultra clean products for home, for health, for personal care, for nutrition, and also for long-term food storage, for emergency preparedness. Check it all out at healthrangerstore.com. And thank you for your support. We appreciate you very much. We couldn't do this without you. Thanks for watching. Take care.